from KCRW and KCRW.com. I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
There has to be more than just a book. I fear for people who just want to write books 10, 15 years from now, I'm not even sure that will be a career anymore.
Best-selling author Ben Mezrich is hardly a favorite with critics, but what does he care? His books get made into movies, including 21 and The Social Network. His newest novel, Seven Wonders, had a deal with Fox before he even started writing it. Then, longtime independent film producer Ted Hoch takes partial credit for Guardians of the Galaxy, even though he had nothing to do with the movie. But first on the News Banter, a couple of brand new movie companies enter the fray, and Russia contemplates a boycott of Hollywood films. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Jeff Robinoff, as you may or may not recall, was for many years a head of the Warner Brothers film studio, really oversaw astounding success recently, Argo, Ben Affleck's movie, Gravity, Alfonso Cuarón's movie, The Great Gatsby, Baz Luhrmann's movie, but nonetheless ousted from Warner Brothers in the last couple of years. For a long time, he went searching for financing, and he found it in China. He's like one of the very few people to go in there and come out with serious money.
Yeah, I mean, this is now emerging as the hot new lifeline for Hollywood executives. If you lose your big studio job, you just go to China, find some money, and start your own studio.
Except it's, as you know, not nearly that simple, because these Hollywood executives who go to China almost always think they're going to get a deal and come away with absolutely nothing. After a great deal of negotiation, China has been a real, you know, thicket where studio executives who are looking for new gigs get lost. Robinoff very patiently had worked it and got the Fosun Group after a number of false starts. So now he's got this company put together. It's called Studio 8. The Fosun Group is backing him, and that presumably will help him get to do business in China with movies, which is also a challenge for Hollywood studios because there's a quota and all kinds of restrictions that people don't understand. And he has Sony backing him to $50 million, which is kind of unusual, a Chinese and Japanese company backing a thing. And he's going to make up to 6 movies a year when he gets rolling, he said. And I think a lot of people are going to be watching that very closely.
Yeah, I think the Sony element here is key. You mentioned how difficult it is to get Chinese companies to actually commit. The fact that Robinoff had a relationship with Sony, who, you know, was opening its arms and wanting him there, gave him a leg up over some other people who have tried in that region. I think it really was a deal maker for him.
Yeah, he also had relationships with filmmakers, notably Chris Nolan, Christopher Nolan behind the Dark Knight series and Inception and the upcoming Interstellar. And I have a feeling, although nobody has said so publicly at all, that Robinoff was able to use that relationship to say, it's not going to take me years to put together a slate of movies. I have people like this who want to work with me. It shows that despite all the innovation and all the MBAs running studios now, those filmmaker relationships and that feel for material is still very important.
Yeah, I mean, that's the intangible. You can have all the money in the world, but if a filmmaker doesn't want to work with you, he's going to go somewhere else with someone that he feels more comfortable. And that's the talent. That's the center of the filmmaking universe.
Meanwhile, another studio ex-chairman, Adam Fogelson, really fired kind of out of the blue from Universal about a year ago, landed at a new company that's staffing up like crazy. It's this producer, Bob Simons, who has a big pot of money to spend. And they are going to try to start a studio from scratch. And I can tell you, many have been called to that and few were chosen. I mean, we've just seen DreamWorks slowly fall apart into becoming basically kind of a glorified production company. And they have no library to generate cash. That's a very tall order that they're going to try and pull off there.
Yeah, I mean, that is the big challenge here because most movies lose money. It's an extremely risky proposition. And the way that the studios are able to keep themselves afloat is they have these giant libraries that they're able to exploit when every new technology or new startup or new distribution company comes along. And if you don't have that, it's very difficult. You are dependent on the what have you done for me lately mentality.
Yeah, Now, one thing that's striking about both Sony with Studio 8 and this Bob Simons company is they are very top-heavy in executives that used to run studios, not just Jeff Robinoff at Studio 8, but Sony has Tom Rothman, who used to run the Fox studio, and they also have Michael DeLuca, who used to run New Line. And at the Bob Simons company, they have a number of executives. Oren Aviv is another one, not just Adam Fogelson, who Oren Aviv ran the Disney film division. So it's going to be interesting to see all these egos packed into one roof, but all these guys do need gigs.
Yeah, I feel like a year ago at Hollywood Reporter, we were doing story after story about executives getting fired. And now I feel like we're doing story after story about these executives finding new homes. And it's all about relationships. I mean, you look at Tom Rothman, who used to run Fox. He got the new Ang Lee movie. Ang Lee is a filmmaker that, you know, made his last very successful movie, Life of Pi, at Fox. And he followed Tom Rothman to this new Sony-based TriStar label. And that's the relationship business.
Yeah, once again, the relationships. Now, the relationship between Hollywood and Russia, meanwhile, is not so good right now. There is talk in Russia. Obviously, there have been sanctions having to do with Russia's incursion into Ukraine. Now there is talk about Russia blocking American movies or boycotting American movies because they don't like the way Russian villains are appearing in these films.
Yeah, I mean, the Russian parliament discussed this issue, and they don't like the sanctions, obviously, but they also don't like how Russia is perceived by the U.S.-based film industry, they say. And they cite specific films like The Avengers and A Good Day to Die Hard and the Jack Ryan movie, all of which had very unflattering Russian characters. And they say, you know what, if you're not going to make films that portray us in a positive light, you shouldn't have access to this market. And that's a significant market. $1.3 billion in box office in Russia in 2013, a big portion of that came from Hollywood movies. So that could be a big deal.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in Russia want to see American movies. Obviously, it's a burgeoning market. And we have seen the Hollywood studios twist themselves into a pretzel to accommodate Chinese demands on content. So it'll be interesting to see now. It's going to be like with a search for a villain in a part of the world that doesn't have a big market share in terms of box office so that if you upset them, you don't have to care that much.
Yeah, I think that should be the new thing. Try to find villains around the world whose citizens don't go to the movies.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Author Ben Mezrich's hometown paper, The Boston Globe, wasn't kind to his latest novel, Seven Wonders, calling out the adventure story as sexist, cliched, and lacking in charm. But Mezrich can live with bad reviews. He's always written with Hollywood in mind, and he's had a lot of success getting his books made into movies. His book, Bringing Down the House, about MIT students trained to count cards, became the movie 21, starring Kevin Spacey.
If you don't know which door to open, always account for variable change. Now, see, most people wouldn't take the switch out of paranoia, fear, emotions. But Mr. Campbell, he kept emotions aside and let simple math get his ass into a brand new car.
In 2009, Mezrich published The Accidental Billionaires, which director David Fincher and screenwriter Aaron Sorkin turned into The Social Network. Mezrich's ostensibly nonfiction books have been met with allegations that he took far too many liberties with the truth. As you'll hear, Mezrich shrugs off those charges, and he won't need to worry about that kind of controversy with his new novel, Seven Wonders. The book about an adventuring archaeologist is pure fiction. Indiana Jones meets the Da Vinci Code. And this time, Mezrich also doesn't have to wonder if his book will be optioned for a movie because a deal was in place from the start. In fact, Mezrich got the idea for the story from his friend, producer and director Brett Ratner, who set up a possible movie at Fox before Mezrich even started writing Seven Wonders. I was looking at a magazine article. It was sort of I wouldn't say it was the kindest. The one I'm sure you know which one I'm talking about in Boston Magazine several years ago already.
Yeah, there's been a few. So I think okay, I know which one, but I mean, there's been plenty. Right.
And in that one, you said, I write for people who, if they weren't reading my book, they wouldn't be reading another book. So that goes, I guess, to the cinematic concept.
Right. You know, my readers, I often have people come up to me and say, this is the first book I've read, or I've only read one book a year. And I do write for people who don't necessarily read. I also write for people who read, but a lot of my audience has been young men, you know, in the past with Bringing Down the House and with the other books that I've written. But, you know, overall, I don't see that as a bad thing. I see it as a good thing. Certainly, I want to write for people who are like me. I love movies. I love television. And so I write my books for people like me who think visually, who want to see something very exciting.
You seem to take this with a lot of equanimity because, I mean, first of all, you've done very well. And again, looking at this article, it talks about how Ben Sherman, the clothing company, sends you, I don't know if this is still true, this was in 2008, free shirts, pants and shoes, your walking billboard, your speaking fee is $20,000, maybe more now, I don't know. Several years have passed. You have created an existence for yourself, it says, every bit as unbelievable as the stories you write. So that sounds good, right?
It sounds good. One, I enjoy being a writer. I always wanted to be a writer, and there's some glamour to it. And then there's also a lot of things that are very non-glamorous about it when you're like in a book store in Detroit and there's two people there.
Right.
But I've always kind of seen myself more than just writing a book. I never just wanted to write a book. I've always wanted to do something bigger. I write nonfiction to be a thriller, and a lot of people don't want to see it that way. And so there are definitely some, you know, old style journalists who aren't going to like the way I write.
I'm not even going to try to identify where I would fall. I'm fairly old style, but I was interested in this because, yeah, I mean, this has been a refrain on in more than one book, that the nonfiction is stretched to the point where it's really not nonfiction. It crosses the line. But is there some kind of feeling like of relief to say, you know what, this is fiction? Nobody is going to say, as they did, for example, with the one that became 21, the MIT kids said there were no strippers that we recruited to work with us. I don't know, were there or weren't there? They said at least one of them.
There definitely were strippers, but there were plenty of strippers. But in terms of writing Seven Wonders, there was definitely a freedom to it. In that I knew nobody was going to call me up afterwards and say, oh, could you please take this sex scene out because I don't want my girlfriend to find out about it, which has happened before in my nonfiction. And
right.
I knew that, you know, there wasn't going to be Mark Zuckerberg calling ahead to radio stations and calling me the Jackie Collins of Silicon Valley, which he did with Accidental Billionaires. But I found the writing process similar in a lot of ways because the research is the same. You know, you get as much research as you can. I had thousands of pages of documents and things like that. And then I sat down to write. But certainly it's very free. Freeing to not have the constraints of real people there.
Now, in one of these articles that I read, it noted that your stories, it said, could be distilled to a mesmeric marketing sentence, a line on the cover that summarizes the drama awaiting inside. And do you think in terms of that when you approach the material?
I do. I won't sit down to write a project unless I can describe it in a sentence, you know. So for me, the perfect sentence was six MIT kids who took Vegas for millions, which was bringing down the house. It tells you everything you need to know about the story. I feel like if you can't tell your story in a sentence, it's probably not going to hold people's attention through a whole book. And in a lot of ways, that's helped me out in Hollywood because I think selling a movie is kind of the same thing. You need that one sentence, not just selling it to a studio, but also selling it to people. The commercial has to have one sentence in it where everyone kind of gets it right away.
That's sort of, you know, I mean, that's obviously not kind of, I'm trying to think of an author who, you know, it's not Kafka, but you have a different vision of yourself, I guess.
I do. I'm not one of these unhappy darkroom writers drinking alcohol and wondering, you know, whether I should kill myself or something. I'm a very happy, upbeat person, and I sat down to become a writer because I love Michael Crichton, you know, I love John Grisham, and also Hunter S. Thompson and Ernest Hemingway. I mean, I had these heroes of mine, but what I loved about them was sort of the glamour of it and then sort of these people who could create things out of nothing and that. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm different. I'm not literary, in a sense, I guess, is the word. And I've always seen myself as part of the entertainment industry. I'm really trying to create content that people will enjoy and be thrilled by.
So when you read this stuff, you know, you seem very good-natured about the carping. And when you read these reviews that say, oh, this is, over, you know, overly cartoonish or the, you know, with it's some of these are
right.
Not very kind. Do you think, well, you know, these people are jealous because I am not some poor slob working in a dark room. I am having a great life. So,
I mean, there's a little of that. I don't think it's just jealousy. I really do think there are people who want to read, you know, a 400-page encyclopedia about Facebook, or who want to pick up, you know, a very slow and boring book about oil. And I'm just not that person. And so I take it all, you know, as it comes. I'm happy to see a review of mine that's both critical or not critical. I've never been bothered by any of that. And, you know, maybe it's my upbringing. I remember the first review I ever got, it was like 1996, and it was my first New York Times review, and it said, This is a bad book. Someone should make it into a movie. And I remember, I love that. That's awesome. And I get my first phone call I get is from my mom. And she says, look, you're in the New York Times.
<That's> Really? You have very different parents from a lot of people.
Really, yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, listen, people are going to have opinions. And I've never been bothered. You know, when I go see a movie, I mean, it doesn't bother me at all if critics don't like that movie. I still love it. The bigger, the better. I love those big $150 million spectacle movies. And they're going to be critics who hate that kind of thing. And I get that. But that's not someone writing a review for me. And so the people who read my books, you know, I don't think they care that much if there are certain reviewers who don't like them.
Now, Seven Wonders so far hasn't gotten great reviews. But you know, you're fine with
Actually,
that.
Overall, I think it's one of the better reviewed books of my career. It's been compared to Indiana Jones or The Da Vinci Code here and there. Some people have said, you know, it's not as good as The Accident of Billionaires, which is kind of funny because when The Accident of Billionaires came out, they were saying it's not as good as Bringing Down the House. And when Bringing Down the House came out, they were saying, well, it's, you know, it reads like a thriller. It's too much like a movie. So, you know, what reviewers are looking for is always a little bit different. But I think Seven Wonders has been seen for what it is, which is something that's going to be, you know, a big movie and is an attempt to recreate Indiana Jones as an anthropologist in the modern day.
Is it going to be more than one movie? Because I thought we heard it might be
a trilogy. Yeah, the goal is three movies and three books. So I'm working on the second book right now, and Fox bought it as the first in three movies. So we'll see. You know, it all depends on whether people like it or not, I think. But the goal is to sort of create an Indiana Jones-type franchise.
What's the status right now? I mean, is the script being written?
Yeah, there's a screenwriter who's working on it now. He's the guy who wrote Hercules for Brett and Bo Flynn. Bo's another producer on the project. So hopefully he'll hand in a draft soon, and we'll see where it goes from there.
There's no absolute guarantee that Fox makes this into a movie, right? This is an idea, but it could end up in development hell like a lot of projects, or not.
Yeah, I mean, you never know when you sell a project to the Hollywood. You know better than I do. But when you sell a book to a movie, and you never know whether it's going to get made. We'll see the screenplay that is handed in. I think that's always kind of the deciding factor. If a screenplay comes in and it's great, it can move very, very quickly. If a screenplay comes in and it's not great, it can take forever. I mean, Accidental Billionaires, it was 1 year from the point that I sold it to the movie was in production, which was insanely fast. 21 took 5 years and multiple scripts. So I've gone through both of those situations. This one feels like it's moving very quickly. So I believe this will get made next year.
You obviously have an amazing amount of resilience. I'm wondering, where does that come from? I mean, I read that you had like dozens of rejections before
dozens,
you got 100, anywhere.
When I first started, I wrote 9 novels in 1 year, and I sent them out, and I got 190 rejection slips, and I had them taped to all the walls. I was, you know, my whole life was rejection. Even when you're succeeding, you're still getting rejected left and right. It's just part of the business, and I love it. I live for it. I like people to say no. You know what? It's fine. It's like it's the most romantic, fun part, I think, of your career is that beginning part where nobody wants you and nobody wants to see what you're doing, and so the whole game is trying to get over that wall. And then it becomes more of a business. So for me, maybe it's just the gambler in me. You know, I'm a gambling personality and I love to take that shot and see what happens. But maybe it's just sort of this, you know, part of who I am. But I have no issue with rejection. I think I have less of an issue with rejection than with acceptance. So I think overall, I have no problem with it. Yeah.
Coming up after a short break, Ben Mezrich explains why he hopes Fox spends a fortune making a movie based on his book. Then producer Ted Hope speaks out on behalf of small independent films, even if you have to watch them on a small screen in your living room. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Santa Monica. KCRW is listener-supported. Help us continue to create and distribute our unique content. Go to kcrw.com/join to donate. And thanks.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to author Ben Mezrich about writing books with movies in mind. His new novel, Seven Wonders, was published by Rat Pack Press, a division of producer and director Brett Ratner's entertainment company. Mezrich wrote Seven Wonders based on an idea from Ratner and knew he'd have a movie deal before he even wrote a word. Knowing the novel might well be turned into a film didn't change much about Mezrich's writing process. When you put the Seven Wonders, you're obviously talking about a lot of locations. Is there anybody whispering in your ear, or you whispering in your own ear, saying, this is going to be very expensive to do as a movie, so why don't we dial it back to six wonders?
Right. It should be only two wonders.
Right.
And it'll be really cheap.
Ideally, like two, yeah.
I think something like this, you want to be a big spectacle. So, yeah, it'll probably cost a lot of money to make. There's no question
Not your
about
money,
that.
Though.
but I personally, when I go to a movie theater, I want to see a big $100 million movie. I don't want to see a little movie. So hopefully this is what that will be.
So normally, of course, a writer writing a book, and I would imagine it's true of in all but the absolute, you know, John Grisham, Stephen Kings of the world, they parse out your advance. But there must have been more money in the equation for you just because it was going to be a movie.
No, not in that respect, in terms of the publishing contract. I mean, all of my books I've sold as movies pretty much. So usually that's part of the equation anyways, is as I write the book, I sell it as a book, I sell it as a movie. You know, you don't get big money until it actually gets made. The options are never, you know, immense. So for an author, I think the big money is when a book is successful in terms of how many millions of copies it sells.
But just to kind of pursue a teeny bit, so I assume just so people get an idea of how this thing works without getting super specific, you get paid for your book and then you get paid an option for the movie just like you would in normal circumstances.
Right, so you get an advance for the book and then you get royalties beyond that advance. So when you earn back your advance, you're going to earn about $3 a hardcover, I guess $2 an ebook nowadays.
I should note that is only in considerable success because a lot of writers never see royalties.
Never earn out their advance, right? Your goal is to earn out your goal is to get paid so much that you never get to earn out your advance.
Exactly.
But the reality is you hope to earn out your advance at some point. And then you sell the movie, you get an option against a purchase price. And then when the movie gets made, you get the big check, which is the purchase price. And they usually don't get any more from the movie. Sadly, the author doesn't really participate in that part of it. And then you make money if the book becomes a big bestseller.
I've collaborated with a writer at Vanity Fair who said he didn't want to even write a nonfiction story unless he thought it could potentially be a movie.
Right.
I think I can answer this, but is it your feeling at this point that you don't want to write a book unless it can? That's your premise from the jump, right? You don't want to.
Yeah,
do it.
You know what? I feel like that's how I've always felt, but mm-hmm. The reality nowadays is even more so that there has to be more than just a book. I fear for people who just want to write books 10, 15 years from now, I'm not even sure that will be a career anymore because book business itself is shrinking dramatically. The amount of books people read, it seems like it's going down. Certainly the hardcover book is dying. How many hardcovers have you bought this year? Everyone's switching to ebooks, which is still fine, but it's not quite the same. And in terms of authors making a living, I think you'll have to have other routes. You'll have to be writing for television. You'll have to be writing for movies. You won't just be writing books anymore because that pie is going to shrink over the next 10 years until it's not sustainable anymore.
So do you see yourself packing up and moving to L.A. and becoming
No, I'll never move to L.A., but I think I've always kind of looked at it as this combination synergistic business, is that I write stories that hopefully will be a book, will be a movie, maybe be a TV show or whatever. I like to look at it that way. If people like Seven Wonders the book, they'll like Seven Wonders the movie. And they'll like Seven Wonders the television series.
Right.
That would be my goal.
They're going to be Marvel is what you're building
always,
here.
Right, exactly. I've always looked at it that way. And I think that authors should think of it that way. I mean, you're creating content. You're creating something that people are going to enjoy. And how they enjoy it, it doesn't have to just be in the pages of a book.
Ben Mezrich is the author of many books, including Bringing Down the House and The Accidental Billionaires. His newest book is Seven Wonders. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Ted Hope is the veteran producer of much-loved independent films as diverse as The Ice Storm, American Splendor, and 21 Grams. A true lover of independent film, Hope shares tales from his career in his new book, Hope for Film. As he recounts in his book, Hope was an early champion of auteur filmmakers like Ang Lee and Nicole Holofcener.
What I've always really tried to do with the filmmakers I'm working with is make that film that when you look at it, you say only one person could possibly have made that. And I think sometimes people need to see that on display before they can move forward. So I'm very pleased in terms of how things went at the box office this summer, because I feel somewhat responsible for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Actually, Hope had nothing to do with that film, but he makes the claim based on his earlier work with director James Gunn, specifically on the 2010 movie Super, starring Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page as wannabe superheroes.
Frank! What? I didn't know I wasn't supposed to kill him! I mean, I'm just learning! You have to teach me these things!
How am I supposed to tell crime to shut up if I have to shut up?
I know, but I'm just trying to help!
I got to work with James and encourage him to make what was a true James Gunn film, something that had his personality and stamp on it. And it hadn't really been exposed to that extent before.
I mean, there's no part of you that feels like, well, James, I hope you come back and do something with all your success, that you can now hopefully exercise some will to make something completely original?
I think that previously directors, particularly feature film directors, were put in a box and weren't given much room to expand. But now, with the wide variety of different platforms, filmmakers can be a lot like musicians or novelists have been and experiment with form. James did this long before he made a feature like Guardians or even Super. He was playing with the internet. He was super active on social media. And I do not think there will be a box that somebody can trap him into. You know, it used to be that you were always being asked to replicate your prior success. And I think people can evolve in new ways now, far more easier than they could previously.
These days, Hope is marrying his love of independent film with new technology as CEO of Fandor, a streaming service for independent film that gives part of its subscription fees back to filmmakers.
For me, one of the reasons I wanted to make films is film is a transformative product. It creates this shared emotional response among strangers in the dark. There's no other legal way to do that. And yet, what is the business of film? Frequently, it seems like it's not much more than selling a 15-cent bag of popcorn for $6. You know, I think we're at a place now where the utility of cinema, how it can help us bring all of us to a better world, is now finally able to be utilized. And I feel like I have not just a front row seat, I have the driver's seat at Fandor.
You say in your book that the idea of, you know, the pleasure of sitting in a darkened theater, I'm quoting you now, with hundreds of strangers appears increasingly archaic. Do you really feel that independent film can be appreciated, truly appreciated in a living room?
The cinema experience is my absolute preferred way of doing things. Yet, I find it exciting to be able to engage with other people immediately upon watching a film. I have a to-watch list, and it extends well beyond a decade past my life expectancy rate. There's no shortage of movies that I know that I will enjoy. It gives me something to live for. I know that I will experience truly life-changing cinema at any time I want. I can access that. But I actually find it incredibly relaxing to know that there's so much great cinema that's out there. My queue on Fandor overflows. My queue runneth over.
Ted Hope is an independent film producer with more than 70 credits to his name. He's also the CEO of Fandor. His new book is called Hope for Film. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kim. It's great to be here.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna and Melissa Morton. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.